Welcome to Dial M for Maple, the AV Club's deep dive look at Riverdale. Today we're talking through our pain and eating knockoff candy with Mrs. Burble. I'm your host, Mara Eakin, and I'm joined, as always, by Cameron Sheets. Cameron, hello.
Hi. If I sound like I'm being filtered through a robot or two, it's because I'm coming at you from across the coast. Across the country, not the coast.
Yeah, you're closer to Riverdale.
I am. Yeah, this feels very much like, I'm in Concord, outside of Boston, by the way, and this feels very much like what Riverdale probably should feel like in the winter, even when there's an ice storm, we don't really get to see that.
You are there for Little Women, which is a movie that probably a lot of people that watch Riverdale will be interested in.
Yeah, the Little Women junket. I mean, there's a world in which there could have been one of these with Lily Reinhart in it. You know, I could see that happening.
I agree.
I absolutely love it, but I guess that's besides the point.
I also really liked it.
That's so great. But we also have quite an interesting episode of Riverdale this week that we, you know, even though I'm across the country, we're like, well, we obviously still have to talk about this. And there's one huge reason why I was like super excited to dig in, as you know.
And why is that?
Well, actually, if any of our listeners remember and can point this out, this would be very helpful. But there was an episode of our podcast last season in which I pretty much pitched this episode of Riverdale exactly. Even down to the, like, let's get a cool guest star in to be the school therapist and just have it be a bottle episode where we're just seeing the students in different sessions with her. And what do you know?
Ta-da! It totally happened.
It did.
Cameron, you're either, like, great, you should be a TV writer.
Mm-hmm. I'll take that.
Or you're just psychic.
I think it is a little of both, to be fair.
I agree.
But, like, okay, that aside.
Yeah. And I thought it turned out really well. I thought it was, like, one of the best eps. Yeah. And everything I've seen, like, the AV Club review, for instance, was, like, they all get the therapy they, like, so desperately need. Which, yes, they do.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. And I think that a lot of people feel this way, as we've said on the show. This season, more than even last, has really scattered everyone to the wind. It's nice when we see them together, but I think because of that, everything that's been happening feels even more just like throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, because there's not been any real center to the show. So even if they're not sharing scenes, like, at least everybody's sitting in essentially the same chair and talking to the same person, just at different points in time. So I feel like even on a structure level, Mrs. Burble does so much.
She's really great.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the actress's name.
That is Gina Torres.
Yeah, Gina Torres. She's great. And she brings, like, she's like the adult in the room. Do you know what I mean? Like, and she's also, like, really great at her job.
Oh, yeah.
Which totally. I really liked.
Yeah, she is. I mean, she also, like, and I also had read the AV, you know, our written review on the AV Club from Charles Bromesco. I had read that, too. And he specifically called her out as being a this character trope that Frank Grimes from Simpsons, you know, where the Springfieldians are such a weird, I mean, they're cartoons and they live in their cartoon world. And so the idea of Frank Grimes in like season 8 or 9 of that show was like, let's put what an actual person would be like in the middle of our cartoon and see how they react to the insanity of these characters. And that's basically what Mrs. Burble is. She's the Frank Grimes of this show right now. Because she's just like, they're throwing everything at her. It's like, remember when my dad tried to kill my boyfriend and then this and this and this? And she's just like, oh, and tell me more about that.
Yeah, she's also like, tough love. You need to shit or get off the pot, Jughead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and they're like,
yeah, I think we can get into it in just a second when we start recapping the episode officially. But I don't think she really gives a false note of advice. I think everything she tells them is pretty spot on. Now, whether they actually like listen to it and apply that to their lives is a different story, but
yeah, Veronica took hers in an interesting direction. Yeah. that we saw at the end of that.
Artistic.
I don't know if that was exactly Mrs. Burble's advice. Nor Archie's.
Yeah, he tried, but didn't take much. Well, let's get into it. I think, you know, the top of the episode, as we had mentioned, we hadn't really heard about these tapes, the stalker tapes, as I called them, in a minute, but they're back. And I guess that's just because they stopped showing up on people's doors, but now that they've reappeared, were concerned again. And
it also seems dumb. Like, they're like, and this time they were slightly zoomed in. Where it was like, okay, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where...
It doesn't mean they're any closer. It just means, like, they have a better lens.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things where, as it's written, Riverdale is, like, really trying to spell things out for people. Because Jughead, in his narration, is like, it's almost like they could break in at any moment. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I think that that was the implication of it getting closer. But thank you for clearing that up, Jug.
You all should get alarms, like...
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
If that's what you're worried about.
Considering how many gangs and Dodgers there are running around this town, I'm surprised that they don't all have, like... Wow, I can't... ADT? What's the service called?
Yeah, ADT.
Yeah. It just seems
But
necessary.
It would be, like, ATD or whatever.
Right, right. So we hear that that's happening, and also adding to the general mood of uncertainty, unease, especially with the teens, is that, like, it's kind of the end of the year, which really is, like, the traditional time for college application letters to start coming in. Or, I'm sorry, acceptance
early
letters.
Early admissions.
The admissions, yeah. And so everyone's nervous about that. And what I guess we can assume is purely a good move on Mr. Honey's part. He asked Mrs. Burble to extend her office hours. I don't know. I certainly went into this episode wondering if there was going to be something else going on. And I'm really thankful that, at least as far as we know, Mrs. Burble is all good intentions.
But, yeah, that there wasn't going to be like Hiram walks in at the end or something. Like, yeah. Hey.
And he's like, thank you for your service, Mrs. Burble. And she's just like, anything for a free bottle of rum. Well, let's get into, I mean, the first case that Burble, that we see, is Burble sitting down with Betty, Elizabeth Cooper, and of course that's pretty quickly interjected by Alice. And the preface to this whole thing was the scene of Betty coming home, and Alice is just like staring off into the distance, and she's like, okay, what's going on? And Alice reveals that she had opened the letter from Yale that Betty got, which was a rejection, and then like continued to snoop into Betty's life and also found birth control, and somehow she's connecting the two because being sexually active means you're failing in school or something.
It's also just like, it's insane. I don't know. I know that they needed a reason to get them in the room together.
Right.
But Alice, come on.
Yeah, I mean, there have been efforts to the show, in the show, that feels like we're sweeping some of the things Alice has done under the rug. And that's why, you know, we'll say this multiple times throughout, that's why this episode feels so necessary. It's like, yeah, Betty is probably pretty pissed at Alice for everything she's done in the past couple years. This makes a lot of sense.
Also, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Alice has told, or Betty has told Alice, that she and Jughead are sleeping together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, she knows. They all live in the same house.
She 100% knows. Yeah, she's like, we sleep in the same bed. Like, I don't get why you're so upset here. Mm-hmm. And Betty, by the way, is like 0% upset about Yale.
Right. So. Yeah, I don't know if she's just got her attention elsewhere right now. It didn't seem to matter. I don't know. I mean, I felt like, I don't know why Yale is like where she wants to be, but interesting. Yeah.
It's always nice to know you have a place to go early on.
Yeah.
That way. So they go into session, get some Skitzgats.
Yeah. I mean, we have to talk about the candy. It's just like, I think, well, the writer of this episode, Tessa Lee Williams, was, I think, did a great job of like really capturing what was going on with everyone, but wanted to probably throw in a little bit of fun classic Riverdale details into the episode. And basically everyone gets offered a candy bar at some point. Skitzgat is just,
and they
the
all turn them down. Like, who are these kids?
I know.
Besides Jughead, of course.
Yeah, notable exception, of course. But I like the conversation they have. Like, it's a joint session, which is nuts. But you know, Burble is pretty no nonsense and just cuts right to it. And this really sets the tone for all the other ones, because it's like, as we mentioned, it's like, here are the characters really just rattling off all the insane stuff that has happened to them so far this season and truly just throughout the show. Let's hear the first soundbite I pulled from Alice and Betty's discussion with Burble.
You will always be my daughter, Elizabeth. And I am so, so worried about you.
But not for the right reasons, Mom. Forget about college and sex and the serial killer genes. Think about everything that you have done to me. That is what I'm going to be unpacking for the rest of my life. So you either start treating me like I'm an adult or I will not be in your life.
I mean, forget about college, sex, oh, and the serial killer genes. It's like, yeah, that normal things, and then also insane Riverdale stuff that is being put on the table here.
Yeah, no kidding.
But again, I think, like, Burble does a good job of cutting through the bullshit here, and is basically her, she deduces that Alice just wants to keep control of Betty because that means she can just hold on to her childhood a little bit longer. And, like, to me, what's most effective is the Alice admitting that, you know, Betty's her favorite. She loves her most, which is, I don't know. I think that's cute.
It makes sense.
It does, because the other ones are.
She's the baby.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones are a little nuts.
It's something you're not supposed to say, but I mean, the other two are kind of a lost cause.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say, but it's like one of those things that is like almost always true in some respects.
Yes.
Mara, which of your kids? No, I'm joking.
I was going to say, are you your mom's favorite?
Yeah.
Andrea, weigh in. And then the last thing is that later on, like at the end of the app, we see that Alice gives Betty her college fund back, I think. But like, how much money was it? It seemed like it was like $7,000.
I guess I really could have paid more attention. Yeah, I didn't see that.
I didn't really take a screen cap, but yeah, it didn't seem like enough. Let's put it that way. For college in 2019. It's more than zero.
Uh-huh. It was enough for Betty in the moment to tell her mom that she loves her most, too.
Compared to who, her dad? I should hope so.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, what other parent are you comparing her to? Edgar? No.
Sure.
But I think that ended on a nice note, and it's like, I would hope that that brings them, you know, the show wants us to like Alice, and we do like Alice, but it's like, we can't necessarily just gloss over all the crazy shit that has happened. So I think this was a good way to handle all that.
Speaking of not glossing over shit, you have case number 70, Archibald Andrews. He falls asleep in class. Then he gets sent to Mrs. Burble. He said he's not sleeping because he's too busy being the Red Justice or Hooded Justice or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he loves his vigilante.
Although Burble thinks
life.
He's going cruising.
Yeah, and I think this is like pretty meta, a lot of what's said here in my mind, because one, Archie feels like he's not doing enough. He feels like he's spinning his wheels, and it's like, yeah, so has your plot all season, dude. But
more than this season, yeah.
Right. And oh, the one part I liked at the beginning of this too is Mrs. Burble assuming that he's not getting sleep because he's out cruising Fox Forest, which is like, is very funny to me. Her gaydar is a little off, I think, but no. But
he could, Moose was out there.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's true. But she basically says that, you know, Archie's got this whole like superhero origin story complex, and it's all because of the grief over loss of his father. It's like, and I mean, and that makes a lot of sense. Like, he of course feels like he could have done more to stop that from happening, and so now he's just like going above and beyond and putting himself out because he's trying to help everybody. I gotta say, well, just in general, what did you feel about the acting in this episode?
I thought it was really meaty I thought it was like really meaty roles. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, there were tears from most of them. I was pretty impressed. I think everyone handled it well.
Yeah.
And Archie gets this big moment. I do have that soundbite as well. So let's hear about Archie being angry.
I know I'm angry, Miss Burble. I'm not an idiot. Look at all the crappy things that have happened to me, to my friends, to my dad. They make me angry. You talking to me like I'm a moron, that makes me angry.
Understandably.
And it hurts. I hurt all the time. And all I want to do is make sure no one else does. But I'm screwed it up.
He's angry.
Yes, he is.
And I think this just really gets to a point where Burble tries to tell him that he doesn't need to do it all on his own, which is, of course, a good lesson. She's like, yeah, she basically is like, I respect what you're trying to do. I see why, but like, you're taking on way too much. She encourages him to enlist volunteers and then has the idea about the anonymous tip line, which, I mean, I think that that could be helpful too, but as we see at the end of the episode, Archie, like, for half a second throws his, like, vigilante cowl out, but then picks it up the minute he gets his first message.
Yeah. The second it didn't go all the way in the garbage can, you're like, okay, he's going to pick it back up. By the way, I'm in a room with, like, where you can hear other people, so if it's loud, listeners, that's why. I will say that, I mean, why doesn't he just go, like, oh, shit, call FP? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Someone's hitting that woman. I'm not the only person in the world that can deal with this.
Exactly.
Apparently, I mean, he thinks he is.
And he knows FP, so he's got that connection there. I just think, like, I'm sure Mrs. Burble didn't intend it this way, but just saying set up a anonymous tip line is, like, pretty short-sighted then because, yeah, it's like, well, now he's just hearing about it even more. And so, of course, he's going to want to do something. So Archie does not take her advice. Also, unless I missed it, the few times I tried to watch through this scene, Archie does not get offered candy at all. Interesting.
Oh, good to know.
A huge bummer. I know. I'm just taking note.
Yeah. And I don't know. I hate that he doesn't take her advice.
Yeah. He also moves into the community center.
He moves out, which his mom is like, okay.
Yeah. I do like when he's like, hey, mom. And she's like, oh, no. But, like, this was another, like, he's doing it to try and keep her safe. And this is another thing. As we said in a past episode of the podcast, it's like, how come they had a drive-by shooting at the Andrews house and nobody seemed to care or, like, process that at all? So at least it comes up this episode.
Betty lives right next door, like.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think someone would know. I keep forgetting that, right, if Betty's next door, then that means all the Joneses are next door.
They would have had to shoot interiors and exteriors. Oh, it would have just been too much.
I mean, you're very right. Production-wise, it couldn't have happened.
Let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about Cheryl.
Absolutely.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, we're back with case 72, Cheryl Blossom. Someone was in the middle of her and Archie there. Cheryl gets called into Honey's office, and he's going to take the vixens away unless she gets deemed psychologically fit. Ultimately, she does not.
Yeah.
She needs to focus on Cheryl. She also doesn't take that three Buccaneers.
great,
and, like,
great name.
She does come off sounding like a little nuts.
I mean,
which I think, as she says later in the episode, is like the point. Like, someone's trying to make her think that she's nuts.
Right. Someone's good at gaslighting for sure. She comes off a little nuts, and she's also,
it's
which I guess this
mom.
Is very Cheryl, but she's also the harshest towards Burble. She calls her Mallard. But I do think that, like, more than anyone, Cheryl needed, I mean, more than anyone, Cheryl needed Burble right now, in my mind. And also, Cheryl needed to get out of her damn house because there's nothing good happening there. As we saw Tony reading the Amityville Horror book at one point later in the episode, it's like, yeah, there's places haunted.
It's interesting how open they are to, like, all, how do I put this? They're all, like, very, like, I'm not taking your advice, F you. And then they, like, And then Mrs. Burble kind of says like one thing that they go, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then they all like buy in 100%. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Cheryl's like, you're not giving you my DNA. And then she's like, oh, you don't have to do the test. Fine.
Right. I love the test. I love that there's a chimerism lab specifically to see if people have two DNA in them. What of this is like the chimera thing is like super mythological. I just, what of this is, if any, is founded in reality and science? I would love to know. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
I pulled a soundbite from their discussion too that I think we should play because I like something Burble particularly says in this.
A missing Jason doesn't explain the other goings on in the phantasmagory that is Thistle House.
What's happening in this Thistle House?
I'm being haunted by a ghost.
Ghosts don't exist. Your life may be defined by gothic tropes, but you're being haunted by grief, by guilt over your family's misfortune, your brother's death.
Brothers, plural.
I'm confused. Is this a metaphorical brother?
No, you mallard. I had a triplet. Julian, whom I absorbed in the womb and has resurfaced as a doll that's moving around my house causing mischief.
Basically, another pretty meta line here in this discussion is Burble telling Cheryl, your life may be defined by gothic tropes, fear being haunted by grief and guilt over yada, yada, yada. But truly, I mean, Cheryl has been living the most gothic life imaginable.
Yeah. And she doesn't even really tell Mrs. Burble that, like, she's talking about the actual body of her brother. She kind of says, like, I go to the chapel and I talk to him.
Right.
Thinking, like, oh, maybe he's buried there. But no.
Yeah, it is. I think it's kind of sweet the way Burble is like, there's nothing that crazy about that. You know, you're talking to him. What's the difference between whatever? But, yeah, she literally is talking to a stuffed taxidermied version of her brother. And that's got to raise some red flags, I would think.
It is weird. Is Nana Rose bad? Cameron, what if that's the case?
I refuse to hear that. Shut your mouth. No. I don't.
She was the one that said the Julian thing.
I mean, definitely. But, like, Nana Rose, it's been implied that she's, like, not entirely with it either. So I would think she's just especially gullible as well.
Mm, fair enough.
So maybe they're all being gaslit. But I mean, it's a possibility for sure. We've never really gotten her whole story. I feel like there were multiple times where we thought we'd hear truly more about her youth, Nana Rose's youth, than we have. But she is, after all, mm-hmm. the one that was, like, plucking Penelope from the Sisters of Quiet Mercy and having her, like, marry into the family after adopting her. Weird stuff.
Yeah, and there was that tree, and, like, we never really found out any of all of that information.
Yeah, I forgot about the tree.
Yeah. Case 75, Veronica Lodge. Hiram has his original bottle of Lodge rum.
Yeah, we love that. His most prized possession after the diploma.
After his Harvard diploma, which looks very fake.
Yeah. That just got printed off on a normal 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
But yeah.
That's
so
okay.
Veronica gets in, and then Hiram bribed. It's not like, we don't know for sure, but it seems kind of like, give my dad your best.
Yeah, I mean,
give your dad my best.
Is it the dean? Whoever she's talking to is like, sipping on some of that delicious rum right now.
Yeah.
And we get that great moment. I really should have pulled this one, but where Veronica is like, son of a, and then Burble's like, Butterflinger?
Yeah.
I gotta say, genius. I love that. More of that, please.
Yeah. Also, like, sometimes there's parts where you're like, is she smart enough to go to Harvard? And then she's, like, pulling out, like, Agamemnon and Electra references, and I'm like, okay.
I know. She's smart. She has really studied up on her classics.
She's also only a teen and is, like, starting a rum company, so.
Right. So this is what we were talking about before, where, like, this gets weird. I mean, I think it's funny that Veronica kind of scoffs at the implied daddy issue. Well, Burble's like, you have daddy issues. And Veronica's like, no.
Let's hear.
But she literally is constantly like, daddykins, like, you do.
Yeah. Also, like, you're still living in the same apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, you're still operating stuff that he's tied to. Like, if you really do want to, like, segregate, like, I'm trying to think of the word, like, separate yourselves, mm-hmm. fucking do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
I mean, she did change her last name, which I had forgotten about until she says it pretty adamantly in this episode. Mm-hmm. Ms. Luna.
Yeah.
Let us...
Let's hear the chit-chat.
Perfect.
I'm not stabbing my eyes out for any man.
Acknowledging that the tether exists is the first step towards breaking it.
Elektra murdered Agamemnon. What are you saying, Mrs. Burble?
Obviously, I'm not suggesting murder, but rather to cut ties with him for good. He's trolling you, so why not ghost him?
No offense, Mrs. Burble, but your teen speak could use an update, as could your advice.
Now, I was taken by this moment specifically because the he's trolling you, so why not ghost him line, because Veronica chastises Burble for needing to update our teen speak, but I was like, I feel like both of those phrases are still being used, right?
I know. I was like, what should she say instead? It's not like she was using like 90s slang.
That's what I wanted to know. And it's funny for it's funny for Veronica to chastise her for that when both like Veronica and especially Cheryl are constantly talking in like with such flowery language, like stuff that no one has said in at least 40 years.
Yeah.
Good moment, though. And
So she's going to destroy... She turns down Harvard, and she's going to destroy Hiram business-wise. Mm-hmm. Which is also, like, good luck. Like, he's had, like, 30 years on you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't...
Of networking.
How is she... Yeah, I don't fully get that. I think that, you know, we were talking about the acting already, and I think that, like, especially in the therapy session, I like Veronica. I thought that Cammy did a great job there, and everyone in the cast does, but... I just, like, there's something about when she's standing up to her dad, and maybe that's because she is, like, the character isn't that confident in it either, but those scenes where she's opposite Hiram, I'm always kind of like, I just don't buy it, and maybe that's not her fault as much as it is, like, well, yeah, of course the 16-year-old or 17-year-old can't actually stand up to her.
She's a senior, so 17 or 18.
Yeah.
But she also, like, is, let me put it this way. I buy that she's maybe that confident, like that she really thinks she can fucking do that.
Mm-hmm.
But like as a 38-year-old, I'm like, no way, dude.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
You're right. It's the a little naivete because she's a teen.
Yeah. It's how you think you're like as smart as like a 70-year-old or a 60-year-old when you're 16. Because you're like, no shit.
I do like the move of her opening that bottle of rum, though.
Yeah, she, like, drinks the whole thing. Well, I don't know if she drinks the whole thing, because that seems insane. But, like, she definitely tossed at least a lot of it.
It would have been so funny if they were, like, having her play drunk and, like, slurring a little bit, or she's trying to step up to her dad there, but...
Yeah, and then throws up on him.
They probably can't show... Can a network? I don't know. It shows them drinking all the time, but, like, would it be bad if it was, like, showing her wasted?
Remember they had that, like, party where they were all, like, fucked up?
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
with
Betty.
Nick Sinclair.
Oh, because yeah, Lily was really great in that scene where Alice calls her and she's like, "Oh, it's my mom." Like, she did such a good job there. Yeah. And you're right. You're right. Point disproven.
I think they probably tried not to.
Yeah.
If anything, I think like it's almost if you want to talk about morals, it's almost worse to be like, "Yeah, she's just doing a nice like neat glass of rum."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's almost worse to be like, "Yeah, you can be like a functional alcoholic, basically."
Yeah, we shouldn't have examples of that in media for our youth.
Yeah.
And
then case 77 here is old Jughead.
It sure is. Forsyth Pendleton.
Who, frankly, is, like, kind of a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, when his teacher's like, you haven't applied to any colleges and no one's going to recommend you. I was like, ooh.
Yikes. Yeah, I think that this, like, what he gets from DuPont is, like, whatever, because we just don't like DuPont and don't trust him, but like for Burble to like kind of throw some things back at him, I was happy to see it. He does need to be like maybe knocked down a peg a little bit, as much as I love Jughead.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. Like, he's mm-hmm. like, I've been really busy. It's like, have you? Like, what are you actually doing, dude?
Well, right, he's so concerned with this whole Baxter Brothers thing, and that's really... I mean, I guess that Burble gives a pretty good read of him where she was like, you know, this is just a distraction and you're not doing your work because then that's just fulfilling everyone's expectations of you anyway. So, yeah, this is some of her, I think, most introspective work as the school counselor here, I gotta say. Let's play that soundbite from Burble and Jug's discussion.
Or you have a persecution complex. Are you paranoid chasing windmills? So you have a reasonable excuse to neglect your real work, writing?
Oh, is that your advice after everything I just said? Just do your homework, kid?
Well, I'm wondering if the real reason why you're so focused on proving that the Baxter Brothers belongs to your family is because you're afraid. Are you insecure about your own talent as a writer?
I'm not going to be psychoanalyzed by someone who doesn't know the phrase tilting at windmills.
I don't understand the tilting at windmills thing. Like, I'm like, it's like a Don Quixote thing, right? But like, yeah. How do we know she doesn't not understand what that is?
I know. That's what I was going to say.
I would think she would.
This is both an example of the teens being kind of stepping out of line and being a little mean to her, but also a case of her just taking things really well. Like, she's such a professional. She like gives him this little smirk after that. That's both like, okay, smartass, like, I know what that is, I just didn't say it. But she's also like smirking because she's like, I'm just, you know, whatever, I don't need to stoop to that level, I'll just let him have that one.
Mm-hmm.
Which I loved.
So the other thing she says, which she didn't pull but I really liked, was like, think about, like, if you're trying to like lionize your grandpa here and your dad's like, he's a shitty guy, think of that's how that's making your dad feel.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're just like not listening to him and like big up being your grandpa.
Yeah.
Solid point.
It really is. And we're,
and
so
he's like, shit.
We're so often just like forced into Jug's perspective, and we do like him that, like, yeah, I didn't really consider that necessarily. Like, we could meet him next week as we're supposed to, and he just fucking sucks, you know? That could absolutely be the case. And it'd be like, I mean, that's good. Like, maybe that will happen, and maybe Burb will help prepare him for this, but that's definitely going to knock Jug down another peg for sure.
Yeah. So it kind of seems like he's just, like, focusing. He's like, cool, I'm not going to do that anymore. Eventually we are going to meet his grandpa. Of course we know. But until then, maybe he's just going to button up and go straight. That being said, he still finds out that, like, everyone who's in this Quill and Skull besides his grandpa and this guy is dead.
Yes.
And they've been murdered. And Betty's like, get out of there. And he's like, I can't.
I have to find
too close to it.
Yeah, he... Well, we have to mention that the name of the person that died was Theodore Weissel, which I have to imagine is an allusion to Theodore Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss, because then...
I was thinking, like, or, like, Ely Wiesel, too. It's like...
Oh, yeah. That could be, yeah. And then you see the other names on the paper. The one I remember is Charles S. Chickens, is one of the other writers that died. I was like, who could that be an allusion to? I wonder... Mm-hmm. But that's obviously just the fun details of the show, which, speaking of fun details, Jug seems to really love senior mints, which...
he likes all the candy.
He does. He's like, and he takes it all home.
Spoken as a kid that, like, didn't get enough... It looks like a kid that didn't get enough food growing up. Do you know what I mean? Like, the way he's, like, packing it away.
Yeah. And again, he is
looks like one of the kids that would be at the center.
Right. He is the only one that we see actually taking her up on the candy offer, too. So I guess that was the show really leaning into that. The other thing he takes away from the session is a newfound respect for his father. And I do love that quick little scene where he hugs him and says he loves him. And it's just an example of the show having them be normal teens in a way that we haven't seen too much of lately.
Yes, and respect for adults.
Right. That's important stuff.
That there are, like, smart adults out there, I guess.
And then, of course, final scene.
Flash forward. Mm-hmm. We get, like, the flash forward every season. So you just have, like, Archie, Betty, and Veronica being identified by Brett and Donna as the suspects who killed Jughead. And, like, ever since a couple weeks ago, we talked about how this is, like, a play that Jughead wrote, or, like, this is his version of the Baxter Brothers. I'm like... Every time there is, like, a flash forward, I'm like,
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this...
Like, if he wrote his own murder.
Right.
His own quote-unquote murder.
This just feels like further confirmation of that, in that, like, I think he had to fake his own death to, like, get out of whatever death trap the Quill and Skull is. Because, like, the most important... The people that need to buy it most of all, if he's faking his death, are obviously these... the Stonewall prep kids and DuPont, whatever. So if we see Donna and Brett buying into it here and believing that they actually killed him, then mission accomplished. So
yeah,
that definitely felt like a check mark in terms of that being an accurate theory. That's the end of the episode.
Let's take a break and we'll come right back.
Mm-hmm.
right, so we're back. Cameron, it sounds like you liked the set. I did.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. I mean, I feel like it's gotten a positive response, and the written review from AV Club is super positive. But, I mean, I agree. It just, well, one, this is something I very specifically asked for last season, so I'm happy in that respect. But, I mean, it's everything I said before. I think the performances were good, and I think it's the show kind of reckoning with itself in some way. And it also is just the office where all these discussions take place that is just like a grounding principle that many, many, many of the episodes this season have not had. So much needed. Cheers to that. And then, of course, I did add at the end of my episode wrap-up thoughts, hashtag justice for Kevin, who we see him like, he wakes up Archie, and then we also very specifically see him giving a presentation on game theory that Veronica's call interrupts. poor guy. What did you think?
I know, it's a bummer. I really liked it, and as always, I like seeing a therapist on screen, mm-hmm. like seeing people go to therapy, seek therapy, receiving it. Also, I mean, of course, they might not take right away, but here we are.
Yeah, not everyone listens.
And she's not like an evil asshole, so that was great.
Right. I think that we're in the clear there. I mean, obviously she could always come back at any point, but that was the biggest win of the episode, that there wasn't, as we mentioned before, some like reveal that Hiram was there or something. Like, thank goodness for that.
Yeah. We have questions from the app for the speculation booth, but I don't know that we need to talk through all of them, because it seems like we sort of talked about most of them.
We have, and I mean, again, this is an episode that doesn't necessarily like give us too many new cliffhangers or anything, because it's so intent on addressing things that have already happened. I mean, yeah, a lot of my questions we have talked through. It's like, okay, do we really buy that Veronica could start a rom company to rival her dad's? Like,
no.
The one question
also, like, is all of Veronica's money from the speakeasy? Like, mm-hmm. It's not enough money. The end.
Yeah, because they've like fluctuated. I don't know. It just hasn't always been doing well, the speakeasy,
yeah,
as we
you
know.
Have, even like having a successful bar is like, it's not going to fund a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. The one.
Anywho.
Thing, I'm still kind of like in my head tumbling this Quill and Skull thing around, because they've all died, and it's like, I mean, is it really just as simple as these people are all dying because they know the truth about the Baxter brothers and they're getting murdered? Like, it kind of feels like there should be more to it than that.
Maybe. I don't know. It kind of seems right.
Right. I don't know. And, like, where does Moose fit into any of it? Did he really just... I know. It's a brain scratcher. That's not a term, but I'm scratching my brain, so...
Yeah. Do you want to do the fan theory here?
Yeah, we only had one that I had seen somewhat recently this week that I thought was just a funny one, and it is from @clickbait. They said their theory is that Kevin joins an Addicts Anonymous group to work through his issues with sex stemming from using Grindr as a 14-year-old. He ends up meeting...
It's not Grindr. It's Grindum. Grindum. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
As he continues, he ends up meeting a cute guy there. They hook up and the writers forget why Kevin was there in the first place. Very funny and potentially accurate. What? Mm-hmm. I mean, it reminded me of that. Well, we just talked about Kevin and we just talked about him getting like glossed over, but there are a lot of reasons why he probably could have used this therapy session more than any. And I guess it's possible and maybe even implied that he did get one. But
yeah, it's also just like, they haven't given him a storyline all season, so to introduce him now and be like, and Kevin's been dealing with this, would be like very strange.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It would be out of nowhere then. But so maybe he did talk to her. But yeah, the poor guy's still got some like deprogramming to go through from his time in the cult, I feel. So hashtag justice, yeah, for Kevin, you know.
Is it next week, or do we get like a couple weeks off?
Nope.
Here?
Next week. Next week we got a new one.
Oh, I was looking for the trailer and I didn't see one.
Oh, interesting. Well, there, I found it. I did find it, and it is nuts. And I can tell you that it has nothing to do. Well, we can talk about it, I'm sure, because most people, if people watched the episode live, they've probably seen it by now too. But it's basically Betty in her home, and she sees Alice. Alice, like, takes a knife and kind of just, like, dead-eyed walks towards Betty. And Betty's like, Mom, Mom, what are you doing? Mom!
Okay. So, strange.
I don't know why that would make sense or what it has to do with the episode at all.
That's called Tangerine.
Yes. And, I mean, that is based, or it's named after the movie from Sean Baker from a few years back. You know, Tangerine, also that
shot on an iPhone.
Yeah, shot on an iPhone. It's, I mean, there's a lot that goes on in the movie, but in simplest terms, it follows this trans sex worker who, like, has just recently gotten out of jail, and she learns from a friend that her boyfriend had cheated on her. So she kind of goes on, it's like Christmas Eve, and it's like over the course of a night, she kind of goes on this journey across LA to, like, find him and figure out what's going on. I love that movie. I think it's really great. But I can't for the life of me think of what it would have to do with Riverdale other than the fact that I would imagine this is the last new episode we get before the Christmas break. And I guess you can consider Tangerine a Christmas movie because it's set on Christmas Eve. So
sure. Maybe there's another Tangerine. We don't know. I don't... Maybe.
Right. As written by our friend Alexander Zalbin at Decider... he had mentioned that maybe the iPhone angle has something to do with it, too, because it kind of could tie into people being filmed and the surveillance and whatnot.
That was what I was thinking.
The official episode synopsis says, after declaring war on Hiram, Veronica enlists a secret weapon against her father, her abuelita. Archie and FP team up to take Dodger down for good, while Betty and Charles investigate a series of strange attacks aimed at Betty. Elsewhere, Jughead's search for his grandpa, Forsyth Pendleton Jones I, leads to more questions than answers, while Cheryl finally makes peace with the past that's been haunting her. So
literally sounds nothing like the movie Tangerine.
Not at all.
So,
and the Alice knife thing from the teaser, like, where does that fit in? Is that these mysterious,
is that the
these
series
strange
of
attacks?
Strange attacks.
But, like, yeah. How is that happening?
Yeah, maybe people are, like, brainwashed against Betty.
Yeah, and we kind of have seen that before in the case of, like, remember when there was, like, those people reacting to the drugs weird and they were basically, like, zombies for an episode?
Yeah, exactly.
So, could happen.
Anywho, let's take a break and we'll come back for the blue and gold.
All right.
We are back for our latest edition of The Blue and Gold, where we talk about our favorite Riverdale adjacent moments every week from the cast, the fans, and beyond. I'll go quickly. Mine is actually not a favorite, but I read today that Camila Mendez and Charles Melton broke up about a month ago, mm-hmm. which is very sad. The end.
Yeah.
It was just sad to see those crazy kids couldn't make it work. But hey, you know, there's always tomorrow.
There is. I mean, I had read the one, it was like E! News or somebody wrote about it, and it's like, yeah, I mean, they're busy, so, and it maybe made...
It's a lot of pressure to have on you when you're, like, 24 or right. whatever.
It maybe made sense when they were both around a lot more, but, like, I don't know, Reggie hasn't been in much of the season, and it's probably largely because Charles Melton has booked
Bad
a
Boys
bunch
for
of
Life.
Other movies. Yeah, Bad Boys for Life, and yeah. The article I read cited something else he was filming in Louisiana. And we know that, like, Cammy had a project with, like, Andy Samberg. So they've been all over the place. It is sad, though, because I remember around this time last year, they had like, gone to, I think, South Korea together.
Oh, yeah. They had that, like, cute photo mm-hmm. with his grandma.
So it's a bummer. But, you know, I think it's probably for the best.
Yeah. And then yours is?
Yeah. So mine just yesterday was announced. Well, yesterday from when we're recording, it was announced that Katie Keene would have its February premiere. And then just ahead of that, we'll be getting a sort of crossover episode where Veronica goes to New York City for a little retail therapy, as they put it. I think it's interesting for a few reasons. One, because as it's written, like, literally the Riverdale episode where Veronica goes and sees Katie is airing on a Wednesday night when the show normally does. And then Katie Keene starts the next night. So it's like, I mean, I guess pretty smart on the show's part if they're not going to directly follow one another, just to be like, yeah, and tune in at the same time, same channel tomorrow.
It's kind of weird because I'm reading this E story and it says that Katie Keene takes place 5 years ahead of Riverdale.
Right.
So, like, is Josie, like, 12?
Well, that's... No, well, I thought it meant like...
Or is it 5 years later?
5 years ahead as in like... Yeah, that's kind of a weird way to put it. It does say that on the E! Article. Because I always heard that it took place after the fact. Because, right, Josie is like graduated technically and moved out there. And I think... But that also brings up the question. It's like, okay, so technically the crossover episode of Riverdale, Katie Keene is 5 years younger than Katie Keene we see in the pilot of the Katie Keene show. Right?
Yeah, it's all very strange.
So the timeline's, it's kind of wonky, but yeah, it'll be fine. I mean, I think that's pretty interesting. It's a smart move. There's obviously like, I don't know, I feel like both Camila Mendes and, wow, I'm totally blanking on Katie Keene, the actress.
Lucy Hale.
Yeah, Lucy Hale. You know, I feel like they could have some fun chemistry, and Katie's been, like, hinted at before in the show. So, it's been a long time coming. I'm looking forward to it.
I agree. Cameron, sadly, I have to wrap this up. It was nice talking to you 3,000 miles away, and it was nice talking to all you listeners wherever you are. Dial Emperor Maple is a production of Onion Inc. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood, and our engineer is Stacey Gerard. The show is hosted by me, Mara Egan, and Cameron Sheets. If you like the show, tell your friends. You can find us anywhere you can find podcasts. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @DialM4Maple. We will see you guys next week for Slasher Alice Cooper, I guess?
TBD. Bye-bye, Bulldogs.